Hello, I'm Kiran Kapoor, and on this week's show...
The Podcaster's Guide to Marketing Acronyms.
There are tools and techniques that should be in every single marketer's toolbox, a bit like hammers and screwdrivers if you're a builder or a DIYer. They are the basic tools that marketers should just know. Whether you're a digital expert, you're somebody that does strategy, you're an entrepreneur, or you're a communications executive, these are the basic tools and tips and techniques that you should just have at your fingertips. So this week we're going to start an occasional series as we start putting together this sort of audio toolkit for you. And in time-honoured fashion, we'll start with A, and this week we're going to look at Ada and Ansoff. But before we do that, we're going to come in with some numbers, and where better to start than the absolute basic marketing toolkit of the four Ps.
The Podcaster's Guide to Marketing Acronyms.
So if you could think of the 1960s.
You are about to know the thrill of seeing that which has never been seen before. You are about to enter a beautiful, exciting, wonderful new world. The world of 1960. For the first time in history, you'll see... not one. Not two. But three completely new kinds of Ford cars for 1960. A wonderful new world of Fords.
It was the height of industry, of making things. Products were new household goods. Cars were just becoming more available. So marketing was all about selling products which were real and solid and touchable. And the four Ps of marketing that McCarthy came up with were product, price, promotion, and place. So we've already talked about the products were real and solid. The price was the total cost to acquire the product. So for a car, it might be taxes and insurance, as well as actually buying the car. Place was most likely a physical store, somewhere where you actually went to buy the product. And promotion was all about advertisements, door-to-door salespeople, letters, direct marketing through the door. And PR was still measured in column inches, because you actually looked to get stories in the newspapers and you literally measured the length of the copy. That's what mattered. Later on, the four Ps was expanded to the seven Ps to look at services, and then in fact again to the 10 Ps, but we'll cover seven Ps and 10 Ps in another week. But increasingly in the modern world, we realise that actually products aren't physical, they're virtual, they're digital, and we have services. So a few years ago, the advertising agency giant Ogilvy proposed experiential marketing and came up with the four Es of experiential marketing. Now, when I tell you what the four E's are, you'll be able to hear that they were dreamed up by an advertising agency, because they are experience, every place, exchange, and evangelism. But the reason for these slightly odd names is because they actually mapped it to the four P's. So product became experience, place became every place, price became exchange, and promotion became evangelism. So let's go through each of those. The easiest way to explain it is probably to get you to think about something that we all see every day, which is an Apple product. With Apple products, the whole experience from unboxing a physical product to interacting with iTunes oozes Apple. So the product really has become the experience. They do have online stores, but you also interact with them with smart speakers, online. And there is a whole stage now in marketing where we have to be worried about pre-purchase searching. When you wake up one morning and decide what you need to buy is a new product, a new app or whatever, you actually do a huge amount of Googling and looking around long before you approach Apple's website to start looking to spend some money. Price, our whole concept of price has changed since the 1960s. We have the idea of freemium models where you get something for free and you pay for the premiums. Also, we have an idea that actually there's an exchange that goes on. There's often information exchange. Facebook is free, but we pay to give up our data. Companies have loyalty programs where you pay less the more things you buy from them. And then lastly, promotion. Evangelism is a bit strong, but it could just mean writing a review. It could mean recommending the company, and it can go right up to getting a tattoo of the logo on you, something that companies like Harley-Davidson see quite often with their customers that are so evangelistic about them. They see themselves as being part of their identity as being a Harley-Davidson customer. So what I wanted to do finally was to put this in context with another four example, and that's Vodafone using experiential marketing to sell their 4G. They had a wonderful way of explaining the product by creating a slide, literally a child's slide, next to an escalator in a shopping mall. So you could take the slower escalator or you could do the fast and fun slide, getting across the idea in an experience that Vodafone sold this exciting, fast 4G product.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.
However, there's a movement that says that marketers should have an additional P to the four Ps or even the seven Ps, and that is purpose. And here is Nigel Clark arguing this point.
Marketers tend to fall back on the traditional marketing mix, the four Ps of product, price, place and promotion, or the extended seven Ps of people, process and physical evidence, and treat that as something of a recipe book, which they can dip into, mix their ingredients and out pops a brand at the other end. And I think increasingly customers, investors, other stakeholders in an organisation are asking bigger questions. They don't just want to see you use a recipe. They want to know why, what you're about, where, what you're trying to achieve, and what the benefits to society are of that. And that brings us into a much broader, broader brush picture of sustainability, environmental factors, social factors that organisations and brands need to take into account. And if they have a strong sense of purpose, I think it's clear what those factors are. If they don't have a strong sense of purpose, I think they get a bit lost.
There are some other numbers which we will look at in the future. There's the seven S's, but I'll do those under S when we get there. Our next model is ADA. Now, this is an acronym for communications, first posed nearly 100 years ago. ADA stands for attention, interest, desire and action. It's a lovely simple model for viewing communications that the first thing we want to do is grab people's attention. We want to then move them into being interested in what we're offering. We then want to create this desire for a product or the service that we're selling. And then finally, the most important thing is the action, because they can sit there being very excited about the product, but if they don't actually do an action, we may not know that, or we may not actually make any revenue. The action is usually a purchase, but it could be to go and find more information. Now, of course, grabbing attention in a noisy, modern, always-on world is difficult, but you don't need to grab everyone's attention. You just need the attention of your target market. So to give you an example, here is one that I listened to a lot recently, which is from the exercise bike brand Zwift.
Fun. It's different for everyone. It doesn't matter if you're a rookie or a pro. Find your fun in a world of endless roads.
Find it when you smash that new workout. Boom.
Find it in a group ride. Find it in a race. Find it when you up the pace. Join Zwift and find your fun with the indoor cycling app where fun is fast.
So they grabbed your attention with the music at the beginning, and although you can't see it, there were lots of moving images and bright colours on the screen. And obviously lots of people sitting on exercise bikes. But did you also notice the peak of the interest? Find it when you smash that new workout. Find it in a group ride. Find it in a race. If you're not into exercise bikes or you're not into being competitive, then this is not going to pique your interest or create your desire. But for the right target market, which is all they're trying to aim for, it could push you into taking some action. And here, that is simply getting more information, because the advert actually ends with a web address for Zwift. If you're not the person that actually wants to buy the bike, you could be in the sort of wider group of decision makers looking at it going, oh, that might be something that is of interest to somebody else. It might be that you're going to purchase it as a gift, or you're going to offer the information to somebody and say, have you looked at this? This might be something of interest to you. And all Zwift is trying to do is stand out in a marketplace where they're up against some fairly straightforward competition. I mean, even as a non-bike rider, I could probably tell you the sort of three or four other brands that they're up against, Peloton being one of the big ones. So Ada is this nice, easy way of thinking about structuring your communications or any advert or any campaign, because you can do these things over a period of time. You can have an attention-grabbing campaign that just starts with something that makes you interested, grabs your ideas, perhaps gets you interested, and then slowly over time explains what the campaign is about and finally moves you to an action. Or as in the Zwift ad, you can try and do the attention, interest and desire all together and finish on the action. And it has this sort of nice, simple, common sense feel about it, which is why I really like Ada so much.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.
And then we're going to spend some time looking at A for Ansoff. Now, the Ansoff Matrix is another one of those absolutely classic marketing tools, and it's a method of planning growth strategies that simply looks at your products and marketplaces. So products is your current products or perhaps potentially new products that you might want to consider developing, and your marketplaces are your existing marketplaces, the customers that already buy from you, that know about you, and perhaps moving into some newer marketplaces, often something that companies need to do in order to grow. Again, it's a nice simple idea. If you could just think of a 2x2 box grid or matrix with four boxes in it, we're literally going to look at all four items one at a time. They go up from the least risky to the most risky. So when you're planning your growth strategy, you need to think how much risk you want to take on and how much risk you can afford to take on. Ansoff is, like many of these tools, looks very simple on paper. It looks quite elegant on paper, but there is an awful lot of real world marketing and a lot of research and product development and research and development that you have to do that goes around it. But as a basic tool for planning, drawing out where you think you are, I have to say it's probably one of the tools I use most often in my own work. So let's start with the first box, the least risky growth strategy, where we have an existing product in an existing market. So we know our existing product, hopefully we know our existing market. And this is called market penetration as a growth strategy. In order to increase sales, we have to encourage people to use more or people to come to us from our competitors. And we can do that perhaps by doing some pricing. We could do some general promotion. And here's an example of Weetabix, the breakfast cereal, suggesting that you can eat your Weetabix any which way, different times of the day, different ways you want to eat it. It's a classic market penetration strategy.
Ah, the classic Weetabix. Clever. Get them to eat a bit of Fruitabix. That looks cozy-a-bix. What the... It's just odd-a-bix. And that is totally bonkers-a-bix. Now I'm starving. What's that bowl-a-bix? Try it any which way-a-bix.
The next box we're going to look at is we're going to take our current products and we're going to introduce them to a new marketplace. Quite often, this is the idea of moving your current products internationally. So I sell marketing qualifications in the UK. I know that area. I know the people that buy my products. I know the type of products I'm selling. And I think, OK, now is a good time to move into selling the same UK products, UK qualifications, into an international marketplace. In that case, I am doing a basic market development strategy. Then I might like to think about a different strategy where I look at my existing customers, my existing marketplace, who I know very well, and I think, what new products would those customers like? So what can I do? What might they take on board? What if I did some research and development? What is the next thing that my current customers would like to have? So I'm going to give you another Weetabix example. Weetabix looked at the fact that their current customers were getting busier and busier and were no longer having time to have a sort of family breakfast or any breakfast at all. Now, that's a big problem if you are a breakfast cereal brand where you need people to not only put out your Weetabix, but actually probably soak them in milk, and it takes a little time for them to be ready to eat. So they came up with the whole breakfast on the go strategy. And here they are with a proper breakfast bottled.
Who has time in the morning? Not me. Too busy sleeping. And that means...
Hey, Kev. No time for breakfast.
Till now. Thanks, Marge. Weetabix have made a proper breakfast you can drink. Okay, let's go.
Weetabix on the go, a proper breakfast, bottled.
And our last box, which is the most risky strategy, is diversification, where we take a product, and actually most likely we take a brand, and we move that into a new marketplace. It does require a really strong brand that people are comfortable with and are happy to move with you. And you are then moving into completely new marketplaces and with new products. Brands that are brilliant at this are brands like Virgin. Virgin seems to be able to move into anything, including brides and cosmetics, because people see it as a brand that they understand and are happy to move with it. But you can also see other products such as Levi Roots, which moved from its original I create a reggae reggae sauce.
Somebody put some music in the food for me. Give me some reggae reggae sauce. Hot reggae reggae sauce. It's so nice, I had to name it twice. Me call it reggae, reggae sauce.
Still taking the brand message, it's Caribbean. It's still got Levi Roots, who is the very much the iconic figure of the Levi Roots brand. But it's taking it into a completely new marketplace.
Levi Roots and Domino's bring you a taste of the Caribbean with the delicious new reggae, reggae pizza. Mozzarella, roast chicken, peppers, tomatoes, pineapple and original reggae, reggae sauce.
Mike. What have you done to the living room?
Order the new Reggae Reggae pizza now and let Domino's bring out the Reggae Reggae in you.
Now, history is littered with examples of this going hideously wrong. And here is Thomas McAlinden with some examples of where things have gone quite badly wrong in the past.
There have been some brands that have really not done well, like Colgate. Now, surprisingly, when many, many years ago when I first started this journey in marketing, especially focusing on brand, Colgate, when I say that to you, you will think of toothpaste, but actually they surprisingly launched a beef lasagna, and that's not made
seriously?
Up. Seriously? Yeah, you can go away and you can Google that, and you can see how they tried to move into food with Colgate. And again, this is something that we might pick up in today, but it's really about go and no-go zones, or some would argue about categorical fit. They're not alone. Coors is another one, a really interesting one, a beer brand that then launched a range of sparkling water, which was a monumental failure. And again, there's arguments over what is known as the fit hypothesis really coming into play here.
What's the fit hypothesis?
The fit hypothesis is quite simply thinking about the perceived similarity, as it were, between that parent brand and obviously the category in which it's being applied with. So for instance, when we talk about Colgate, that the immediate thing that comes to mind is toothpaste. And toothpaste is so far removed from food, as it were, that it makes it a bit difficult to make that kind of connection, which from a consumer's point of view really starts thinking about, has this reached or exceeded the perimeters of its brand extension? And Davidson in 1987, I think it was, came up with something called the perimeters of brand extension, talking about the further you move away from the core, obviously the more risk it is, but the more difficult it is to make this a success. And this really fits in nicely with the fit hypothesis. And this has been discussed and debated within the literature by numerous authors. One that kind of comes to mind is Lahiri and Gupta in 2005 that started talking about that consumers are perhaps more likely to embrace a new product if there's deemed to be some degree of compatibility between the brand and the new category. And that's been looked at and studied extensively. And again, a really interesting author by Cheller in 2003 or 2008, I think it was, had a look at the central role of fit as well and showcased that it can be, but what they also discovered is that it can be bypassed. Fit isn't the be-all and end-all. It's actually what we need, what we can do as marketers, i.e. our use of the marketing mix can actually still make a success of some of these things. But there are occasions where these brands and what these brands are associated with, which we're trying to do and build brand equity, can possibly make life difficult to try and extend into categories that are really unrelated to it. And the Colgate and beef lasagna is a classic example of that.
Yeah, I'm still struggling with the idea of Colgate lauter beef lasagna. You'd expect it to be minty flavoured. Yeah. You just can't get that.
Exactly.
And that's it for this week. Do send in ideas for the toolbox. You can use any of the Cambridge Marketing College's social media platforms. And I'll catch you next week.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College. Training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.